Psalm 115 this evening, the first few verses of this chapter. Psalm 115. It is good to see our visitors, especially those of you connected with Bill and Carolyn and the Cote family. It's always encouraging to look out and see old and familiar faces, some more familiar and some more old, but good to see you, all of you here this evening. Psalm 115. Not unto us, O Lord, not unto us, but to your name give glory, because of your mercy, because of your truth. Why should the Gentiles say, where is their God? But our God is in heaven. He does whatever he pleases. Their idols are silver and gold, the work of men's hands. They have mouths, but they do not speak. Eyes they have, but they do not see. They have ears, but they do not hear. Noses they have, but they do not smell. They have hands, but they do not handle. Feet they have, but they do not walk. Nor do they mutter through their throat. Those who make them are like them. So is everyone who trusts in them. O Israel, trust in the Lord. He is their help and their shield. O house of Aaron, trust in the Lord. He is their help and their shield. You who fear the Lord, trust in the Lord. He is their help and their shield. The Lord has been mindful of us. He will bless us. He will bless the house of Israel. He will bless the house of Aaron. He will bless those who fear the Lord, both small and great. May the Lord give you increase more and more, you and your children. May you be blessed by the Lord who made heaven and earth. The psalmist here takes as a given that which many of our age would dismiss on its face, and that is the idea there is a power of being a God above us. Call him what you will, name him as you might. We're not the be-all, end-all of the universe. There is something above, beyond man and our own mortality. That has always been the default position of humanity throughout time. It's only of recent days that the so-called sophisticated knowers, the intellectuals, will say, well, there is no God at all. Well, the psalmist says the fool says that 2 times in the Psalms. The fool has said there is no God. Well, of course, it's foolish to look at all that God seemingly has done, has left behind as clear and convincing evidence, and in the face of all that proof, shout out to the heavens, there is no God. That's rank foolishness. And the truth is, even those of our day who on the surface would say by their language, don't believe in God, there is no God. They can't escape the idea because, as Jesus will say in Matthew 6, you can serve God or mammon, but you can't serve both. But you have to serve one is the implied idea there. You can't live a life heading from this life to the next and not be in service to someone but yourself. Even if that someone is yourself, you make a God of yourself at the very least. But those of the time of the writing of this psalm, worldwide it seems, all had the one basic cardinal belief that there is something beyond us, something above us, and different nations, different peoples had their own gods they served. They went all the way from benign and harmless to malignant and dangerous. They had people worshiping at that time gods like Baal and Ashtaroth. Not too far distant from this time, you have the worship of a god called Molech, to whom parents actually offered their children as living sacrifices in a burning inferno to this god of Molech. All different kinds of gods. And the difference in the God of heaven at this time was the fact that it would seem God's people were at a disadvantage. Because the heathen nations could say, when asked, well, where's your God? Well, step out here and I'll show you. And they'd show a huge monument or a giant altar or a huge man-made, handcrafted idol and say, well, there's our God. Where's yours? Well, all the different nations could point to their gods. And they asked the Israelite nation, the people of that nation, where's your God? And it would seem to put them at a disadvantage because they couldn't go over and point to anything they'd made with their hands and say, that's my God. Because as you know, as they understood, the God of heaven is not something you can put together with your own hands and form with your own imagination. Now, you can jump forward several centuries from this into the New Testament era and remember the words of Paul outside Athens in the Areopagus concerning this very matter. When the people of Athens were so involved in various kinds and types and hues of idolatry that they had altars to even those gods described as unknown gods, perchance they'd missed one or two. And Paul begins by saying, you're very religious in doing all of that, but you've missed the one God of heaven and earth. And before he begins describing the God who made all of us, in whom we live and move and have our being, he tells them that the God of heaven and earth does not dwell in men's temples. He's not made with men's hands as though he needs anything, seeing that he, God, gives to all men life and breath and all things. He's made of one blood all nations of men for to dwell upon the face of the earth. He has set the boundaries of the nations and the times of their habitations. God is the one, the only one, who actually is. And the gods of the Athenians, as plenteous as they were, and as their idols spread across Athens so much so that some scholars say the gods outnumbered the people in population. Well, Paul's point was, all that is meaningless because there's just one God who made everything, and he's not even represented here, except with the plaque, the unknown God. Well, in similar fashion, the writer of Psalms here, back in Psalm 115, is making much the same point, that these man-made, handcrafted idols they'd put together, whether small at home or large out on a city square, these idols, they looked good, but they couldn't look. They were attractive to the eye, but they couldn't do anything except just stand there and attract the pigeons, as it were. There's nothing they could do. They weren't alive. They weren't real. They were just man-made concoctions and imaginations of men. That's all they were. In contrast to that, he describes, the psalmist does here, the God of their day, the God of our day, the only God who's ever been, the I Am, the Alpha, the Omega, describes him as dwelling in the heavens, in the realm beyond this one, the realm beyond time and space, the realm outside our laws of physics, the one whose beginning is the same as the ending and both mean nothing because he lives outside of time itself. He resides in the heavens. From our perspective, that's true. And then he goes on to say he's done whatever he pleases. There's not a better passage in all the Bible describing in more succinct fashion the sovereignty of God than that. He's done whatever he has pleased. The idea of God's sovereignty suggests the fact that he is beholden to no one. He does what he does based upon his own volition alone. He can't be intimidated. He can't be manipulated. He can't be coerced. He can't be moved. He is God, sovereign above everything. And because of that, he does whatever he pleases. Now, here's what the psalmist is getting to. It's not just an academic discussion of what gods are real and which God is absolutely real. Those gods that seem to be but aren't, and the one God that you may miss that is actual. His point is not just an academic one. It's to the core of what this God we serve is like. What's his nature? When you think about it, it's a troubling thing outside the scripture, just to give imagination to the thought of a universal being mighty enough to create a universe which has, as best we know it present, as many as 17 septillion stars, all of which are their own solar systems. Within the hundreds of billions of galaxies, with all of their hundreds and billions of stars, we just live inside our own little solar system, with our own little planetary system, just one of a group here. The God, awesome enough to make all of this by the mere sheer breath of His voice, He commanded, the psalmist said, and it stood fast. Our imagination can run wild thinking of God like that, who was less the good God that He is. If He were a malevolent and bitter and vengeful God, with all that power. If you've seen any kind of interesting blockbuster movie, you know there's always a villain, and usually the villain has unlimited resources and an unlimited numbers of minions to do his work, his bidding. And the good news is always there's some hero or group of heroes that can stop those villains at the last minute, and all is well and good, and you can put your popcorn away and go home. The world is saved once again. Sometimes the universe is saved once again, at least the galaxy is. But imagine if there weren't any stopgap measures in the process, and these villains were not just people or beings, but they were omnipotent gods who had complete power over everything and had no one to stop them, no one with the ability, no one with the power to stop them. Well, you say, well, that couldn't happen. Well, we have a God who is good, the only God, and He is good, but imagine if He weren't. And again, you say, well, that couldn't be. Well, it couldn't be because it's not, but it could be if it was. And that's the whole point here. Many of these gods that they had made, these heathen people, these gods they had made were malevolent beings. They always had to look around their shoulder concerning and do their best to appease and to atone, and they're always concerned about what might happen next. And the psalmist said, and the psalm is replete with ideas and passages along this same line, he says, no, the Lord has been mindful of us. We have a song in our hymnals, one of Brother Sanderson's songs, used to preach here. The Lord has been mindful of me, taken from the verse in this very psalm. The Lord has been mindful of us. Now the psalmist will say in Psalm 46, the Lord is our refuge and our strength, a very present help in trouble. He'll say in Psalm 23, the Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. In the New Testament, Peter will say we can cast all our care upon Him, for He cares for you. We can pray as Jesus taught us, hallowed be Thy name, give us this day our daily bread. We can say this to a God we know is good because that's the kind of God He is. So the psalmist's whole point is, unlike the God that you make that don't even exist, they're just making it up out of whole cloth, we serve a God who is above and beyond all of this, the only God that really is. We serve the God of heaven and earth who does whatever He pleases, lives outside this realm, but in dealing with those of us within this realm of flesh, He cares about us. He's mindful of us. Which begs a question, as I've mentioned before, I have struggled with for so many years now, and that is the same question the psalmist will ask in the 8th psalm. When he considers the moon and the stars which God has ordained, and then reflects with the question, what is man that You are mindful of him? We are full of faith in the fact that God does care for us. Don't question that. We shouldn't. The only question we have is why? Why does He give us a second thought? Why does He care what happens to us? That's the larger question, and it goes to the very nature of God Himself and His decision all those centuries ago to create us in His image after His likeness. And because of that, having a very serious and profound interest and mindfulness concerning us, even as we turn against Him, even as we rebel against Him, even as we refuse to bend the knee to Him, He still finally, as you know, sent His own Son to die for us, because He's mindful of us. Always has been. We serve a good God. You remember the wonderful 100th Psalm that speaks of God as both a great God and also a good God? Where the psalmist says, "Make a joyful noise unto the Lord, all ye lands, serve the Lord with gladness. Come before His presence with singing. Know ye the Lord, He is God. It is He who hath made us, and not we ourselves. We are His people, the sheep of His pasture. Enter into His gates with thanksgiving, into His courts with praise. Be thankful to Him. Bless His name, for the Lord." And here's the end of that psalm. "For the Lord is good. His mercy is everlasting. His truth endures to all generations." It's a wonder that God is so very good to those of us who so little deserve it. I mentioned a moment ago the huge expanse of the universe spreading out among 17 septillion stars, of which those find one star which is ours, the sun. And God, over and above all of this vastness of creation, looks down upon one people on one planet, and He's mindful of us. And not just us as a planet. On this orb we call the earth, He looks at you as an individual, and He's mindful of you. It's staggering to think about. It's humbling to consider, but it's true. The Lord has been mindful of us. And of this, we are thankful. My friend, if you're here this evening and you're subject to the invitation, I urge you to come as together we stand and sing.